Before we get started on the Bengals Beat podcast, I wanted to let you know that we are now brought to you by 50 West Brewery. They have award-winning beers coupled with a bike shop, canoe and kayak library, volleyball leagues, running groups, and a killer food menu. At 50 West, they pride themselves on adding value to people's lives through beer. Is there a better way to add value to people's lives than through beer? Whether you're looking to take a float down the river and end with a beer or throw back a couple and play some volleyball, 50 West is unlike any other brewery you've ever seen. Check out their website at 50westbrew.com. That's F-I-F-T-Y, westbrew.com for more information. 50 West, where every beer's a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Weiner Jr., invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Jim, we're halfway home to the regular season. We're almost there. Like, it feels, we get our first road trip out of the way this weekend. We go to Washington.
Yeah.
And then you have the game that no one cares about. Yeah. I mean, no one cares about.
I was going to say we're more than halfway through now, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. That thing is it's like a glorified practice at Indianapolis, especially with the 90-man rosters.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really going to be a nothingness.
Yeah. Whole lot of unexpected the plays, and then guys who have to dress just because they have to fill out the rules, but we wearing baseball hats.
Yeah. So basically, we've got one more game left, and then we're talking about the regular season opener and prep for that. So we're almost there. Almost there. Excited about that. You know what? You know what else it means when we're almost there? Just don't talk about Beyond the Stripes.
Yeah.
Who's excited about that?
Everybody.
Everybody is. We're moving.
Yeah.
We said, you know what? Can't do Kentucky. We're on the move. So we're back. We're back down on the banks again, although we're at the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
So Bengals line is there on Monday. We are there on Tuesday. So Holy Grail, every Tuesday this year, Beyond the Stripes, starting August 29th. So before the glorified practice in Indy, on the 29th, we will be at Holy Grail. And then every Tuesday going forward. And we know our first guest.
Yes.
Andrew Billings will be our first guest, which he's a good preseason story. We'll talk about him as we get into the defensive outlook here today.
Does Holy Grail serve pancakes?
Dude, they need to. We can at least get them some batter, cook them up about, see how many pancakes Billings
all
can
in
take
one
down.
Sitting.
Absolutely. I like it. So that's going to be going on. So if you've never been down to the show, we have a ton of fun. Fun games, football, beer, food, all that stuff. So come on down every Tuesday starting August 29th for Beyond the Stripes. Myself, Jim, Lindsey Patterson, Paul Dougherty, and then we have a Bengals player every single week. Sometimes a coach every once in a while. Maybe a smattering of former players in the Bengals 50 season. We'll see. We try to keep them pretty relevant. So come on down and check that out. Today on the BBP, defense.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tough decisions, which we kind of got into last week on offense.
Right.
And they popped up again on Saturday's game against the Chiefs when the Bengals got destroyed in pretty much every phase except kicking.
Yeah, right?
Go kickers. Figure. Kickers can't do any wrong at this point, seems like. Perfect again, so they're perfect 7-7.
Yeah.
But
which that also presents sort of a problem, that they're a perfect 7-7.
They're kicking a lot.
I don't think they've kicked the PAT yet.
No, they have. Not with the first string.
Not with the first string. They've won PAT.
First string yet to score a touchdown.
or even A.J. McCarron's group. You know, so I think that it's funny, Paul, because they are two-thirds of the way done. So, look, this team couldn't score in the red zone last year. They couldn't score generally last year. Andy Dalton's group has an interception in the end zone, has a kind of an overthrow in the end zone. On one hand, they're kind of like, well, there's no game plan. Like, they're in that balance of, like, it's game plan, it's preseason, but all these guys have been together. There's really no, like, communication, chemistry issue between the quarterback and receivers. I mean, it's not like John Ross is being weaned in or anything. I mean, it's a pretty, you know, static group.
Yeah.
And yet, it's like a static situation from a year ago.
Yeah, we haven't really seen much. You know, it's hard. We both kind of wrote about it on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
About it's hard to – how much judging do you do? I mean, how high am I raising the red flags up
right.
on the Bengals defense that has let the Bucs and the Chiefs march down the field in their first team every time the
right.
first team's been out? The three drives, all of them have gone pretty much the length of the field. Two chip shot field goals and a touchdown.
Right.
They haven't stopped anything.
Right.
Anything.
Right.
And – so how much do you get concerned about that, and how much do you say, well, you know, they're out there, they're mixing in young guys, they're without Adam Jones as a starter, they're without Drake or Patrick as a starter,
yeah.
without George Iloka, all guys who are going to be back because they're trying to see how young
right.
guys do. They're trying out some of the younger edge rushers to see if they can hang against starters. They're trying out some of the younger defensive tackles to try to get them in there. They're doing all that. So how much, though, are you going to hold it over the head of what is essentially the starting group, though, that
right.
they're not making any stops in a preseason game? I don't know.
Yeah.
Some.
Right. Put it this way. If you had this is going to be really terrible analogy, but, like, you can you raise your eyebrows as high as they can go, and then maybe if after a full half of football in Washington it's the same stuff, then maybe the little flag pops up. Because you won't see these guys again until September 10th.
Yes.
So maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just like, you know, we do what we did, which was bring it up, but kind of couch it and then, you know, revisit it again
yeah.
in a week.
I mean, you can't ignore it.
Right.
You can't ignore that teams are just marching down the field on them. They're not stopping anything.
Right.
I mean, 12 play drives, 13 play drives, 90-some yards. It's like, you know. You're supposed to be the first team out there. You're supposed to do something. So, anyway, interesting there. Jeff Driskel did not repeat his performance
from last week,
2-6-13, in an atrocious performance by all the players that were in the second half.
Right.
A none too happy Marvin Lewis after the game. I mean, you're you know.
I guess here's my thing with that, and I'm not quite ready to – toss Jeff Driskel off the 53-man that we picked yesterday, but this was the thing I brought up. Pat myself on the back, kind of. Like, they didn't really run those boots and things. Like, he kind of was in the pocket a little bit, and it didn't look all that great. And that's kind of what I asked to see, I guess, this week.
The pocket didn't look great.
Well, that too. Nobody looked great. So maybe that's not a fair judge, but I guess that's the thing. Like, you know, you didn't see these sort of designed plays to make him look good. It was like, okay, do this other thing here. And look, let's face it. You know, if we're going to give you compliments and kudos for moving the ball and looking good against third string, then you got to take the slings and arrows for not looking good against the third string
yep.
the next week.
And the bottom line is they've got to figure that out because, as we pointed out last week, if you're keeping Jeff Driskel, somebody that you really like has got to go.
Right.
So we'll see how that plays out. So, but that was last week. Last week was offense. If you haven't heard our offensive breakdown, go back, listen to last week's BBP. We went all into who we thought would stay, who would go, where the decisions are at with the offense. This week, we are moving forward
yeah.
and on to the defensive side of the ball. And really, what's been interesting, Jim, is one guy has come into everyone's crosshairs, and Bengals Nation – has clearly decided we've decided who we hate this year.
Right.
We've decided. It's every year it's somebody new, right?
It's
they're always somebody who's getting older, and then somebody writes on a blog somewhere that this guy stinks
right.
or whatever, and it spirals and it turns into a thing. Sometimes it's legit, sometimes it's not. This year that guy's Michael Johnson.
Yeah.
Bengals fans have decided that this guy sucks,
yes.
and they want nothing to do with him, and he should be gone and thrown into the trash and yada, yada,
yeah.
yada. There is a very interesting discussion to be had surrounding Michael Johnson's case.
Yeah.
So I will – fans are not off base with frustration over that position. But I think it's much more nuanced than what Bengals fans want it to be. Cut him. Get rid of him. That's it. I'm done with him.
Yeah,
there's just a lot going on there.
Yeah, yes. I think there's a few things. One, it's, how many defensive linemen is this group going to keep in 2017 at the start? You know, they released Brandon Thompson this week, cutting bait with another high draft pick on the D-line that didn't work out. Thins the room slightly, but not really.
Because I don't think we really saw him in
the mix. We didn't really put him in that sort of group in contention to make this roster. But with Michael, there's salary cap savings, but there's still a hit with his signing bonus. There's veteran leadership and presence and how the coaches feel about him versus what we've seen really, Paul, since he came back from Tampa Bay. And honestly, Tampa Bay made a decision on him after signing him to a big deal, you know, 3 years ago. So
they ate a huge contract.
Yeah. Then there's the fact of what we've seen, which is not so good on the outside. Flash plays on the inside. So yeah, you're right. There's a lot to Michael and this 53-man here in 2017.
So let's basically talk about Michael Johnson while talking about the defensive line and start there. So you've got a series of locks, I think, in here. You know, we know Carlos Dunlap, Geno Atkins are going to make this team. Andrew Billings is probably going to be – I think there's a good chance he ends up the starter next to Geno Atkins. You have Jordan Willis, who is defensive end, who's the primary guy who has looked the best.
Yeah.
I think is an all-around guy who will be sapping – snaps from Michael Johnson as the starter. So even Michael Johnson would be the starter in the base defense on the end in that scenario, but I wouldn't see him going much further than a first down type deal until you'd be lessening his snaps. I think the one thing we can guarantee, his snaps will be far less this year, because the one thing the Bengals were missing last year was an edge pass rusher that could really come in and replace him in that fact. They were just they didn't have any that they could really feel like they trusted. Now they've got some.
Right.
And they're picking between them.
Right.
Which is what gets us into the group behind. So you have Will Clark on the end. You have Jordan Willis on the end. You have Chris Smith on the end. You have Wallace Gilberry, who can step out and play. And you have Marcus Hardison, who quite frankly has shown absolutely nothing and been a non-factor all around. I don't see a scenario where he's on this team.
No.
So Chris Smith has been an absolute beast. Chris Smith has dominated it in the second half. He's shown well in he got more chances in the first half this past week. How does this shake out? Because you can keep 8, you can keep 9. We've seen them keep 10 plus another guy who can step in as a rusher, because we're not mentioning Carl Lawson because he's technically a linebacker, but he comes down and rushes off the end. So who goes, and why does Michael Johnson stay?
Yeah, this has been a big struggle for me, and I think it is for the team, Paul, to an extent. We've debated this off air for the better part of 2 weeks. I think he stays because there's a lot of football reasons that say he should go.
Absolutely.
I think it's that nuance you talked about. It's all those other things. I don't really think the million-dollar cap hit really truly is a huge deal, but it's a factor. When you consider Wallace Gilberry is like $300,000. Mm-hmm. I think Michael's like 1.2, whatever his signing bonus.
Yeah.
In dead money. So, okay. They saved $800,000 with Brandon Thompson. So I think in the end, Chris Smith is interesting to me because, yes, you're right. He has dominated guys he should dominate as a fourth-year pro, and he's playing second and third team. But, look, he was given just a couple nickel rush snaps against first team Chiefs, and you didn't see anything. And I hate to say it, but like a guy like that who has no track record with this team, a little bit of film, but he never could crack anything for your beloved Jags the last 3 years. And they're, you know, great defensive line. Doesn't he almost kind of have to, in his three nickel rush snaps against the first team Chiefs, get to the quarterback or look as good as he does against
That's unfair to me to just say you got three snaps to prove that you can play in this league. Dude, you know, what the all-time record, right? 22 and a half sacks is how many of your total snaps that you had if you were Michael Strahan or whatever. I mean, that was like out of like 1,000 snaps.
Right. Well,
I
get it.
He's got three snaps. Get to the quarterback and you're cut. That's not fair.
No, it's not. Well,
it's not fair.
Since when is this?
When he's
team,
been out there, I mean, you
since
about
when
second
is this
or
team
third
fair roster decisions in a lot of ways?
Well, that's fine, but I'm just saying, the guy has produced enough. I mean, some of these guys might be jokers on the outside that he's right. done stuff against. Some of them haven't been complete jokers. I mean, some of them, you know, he's dominated at every point. He's been the most effective edge rusher, I think. Him and Jordan Willis, maybe. He's been the most effective, I think. I'd have a hard time keeping him. When you need pass rushers, like this team needs pass rushers,
right.
to have a guy that you traded for, granted, you didn't give anything up yet.
Right.
The only thing, you actually only, keeping him is the only way you lose anything.
Right.
They would lose a seventh-round pick. He's a
so
conditional
I get,
pick.
Yeah.
I have a hard time cutting that guy and leaving him out there.
Yeah, and I get all that. I guess for me, Paul's, I don't know who this team, this coaching staff, lets go. Because it would have to be either Michael Johnson or it would have to be Will Clark if you're going to put Chris Smith in there. And I don't know. Well, put it this way. In 10 days, I would not be surprised if Chris Smith is on this team and one of those two guys isn't. However, on this BBP and our roster projection, I got to go chalk with eight guys who you Bengals fans could run off. It's the two draft picks from this year in Ryan Glasgow, Jordan Willis. It's the fourth year Will Clark. It's Andrew Billings, Pat Sims, Geno Atkins, Carlos, and Michael. I think Deshaun Williams, to be honest, Paul, like if we're talking straight up football, Michael Johnson's not on this team and Chris Smith is. Ryan Glasgow's not on this team and Deshaun Williams is. It might like if I get to just pick production that I've seen in practice and in games.
Yeah.
But I don't know if, again, I'll see it when I believe it. I'll believe it when I see it.
Do we know that anybody, Jordan Willis, Chris Smith, Will Clark, can play the run on the end? I don't know that we can say that. We know Michael Johnson can still play the run. He can't rush a lick out there.
No. And I think that's been proven over several seasons now as opposed to just a bad camp.
He looks like a guy where injuries have caught up to him, and that's just gonna kind of be the deal. But he can play a role as your run stopping end that's in there on your base run situation, first down type stuff, short yardage type stuff, and then, you know, most situations you're in this league, the Bengals were in nickel 70% of the time last year. Michael Johnson wouldn't be in for that this year. He won't. I don't think.
No,
unless he becomes part of a pass-rushing nickel team where he moves inside next to Geno.
Right, which is, I think we've seen that.
Which we have seen him do that before, and we've seen him show some effectiveness
right.
in doing that. Even in the preseason here, when he's been in there, where you would have Carlos, Geno, Michael, and then Carl Lawson,
right,
or Jordan Willis, whatever, pick your poison on the end there.
And here's the thing, I guess, with you when you ask that run question, Will Clark and Michael Johnson, to me, at least they know that the Bengals coaches know that those two guys know how to do that. So whether or not they actually make a tackle or not, they know that those guys will follow their assignment and at least take up space and maybe you let Vontaze Burfict and Kevin Minter clean it up. Whereas Jordan Willis, as a rookie who's never had to do that on a regular basis, do they know Jordan Willis on first down, if that team runs and they pull that tackle or that guard from the other side right at him, Marshall Yanda's coming around, does Jordan Willis know what he's doing? They don't know that.
They
he might.
That. They don't know that.
So they know that at least Michael Johnson, Will Clark will be where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know, is that enough to make a team? I mean, maybe the Bengals fans right now are banging their head against the wall saying no, but again, history. I'm only going to go with the history of this coaching staff.
Yes,
and that's,
and that's really, this is really where what comes down to. And Bengals fans don't want to hear this.
No.
They don't want to hear this. But I'm telling you, this is why I think the way I do about Michael Johnson,
right,
he's going to be on that team. I don't need to do anything but look at what this team has always done with this,
right,
type of guy. Whether Robert Gathers, whether Leon Hall, whether insert name here.
Domantas Pekko last year.
Domantas Pekko. They always keep a guy 1 year too long.
Right.
Who they're loyal to. Who,
right,
who they feel like has been part of the fabric of this team. They just do, and they find a role for him. Now, that's what's going to happen in this case. I just don't see a scenario where they suddenly change. And Marvin Lewis is a big Michael Johnson fan. Remember when he went down, when he first came back here, Marvin referred to one of the shiniest pieces that we have.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's the way this team and this coaching staff and this organization has always operated. I would be shocked if they strayed away from that and kicked Michael Johnson to the curb. How many teams in this league would cut Michael Johnson? More than half.
Yeah.
Probably closer to most.
Yeah.
Or all.
Right.
They would. And that's what.
And this is the same conversation we had about Ray Manluga. And,
Ray Manluga also in that boat.
And even Leon to an extent years ago.
I absolutely. Mean, yeah. It's all these same types of guys. They honor these contracts more so than any team. They feel like that's the offset for them. They like to honor teams and guys and their contracts and be loyal to them. And they give far less money on the front end guaranteed.
Yeah.
That's sort of the way they view it. They view it as a two-way street more so than probably every team in the NFL. And I think that's going to come into play here. And they also don't like dead money.
Right.
And I think that is a partial element here of the 1.1 whatever that there would be in dead money, even though they would have cap savings.
Right. And that would go even into next year, too, because I think Michael's got 2 years left.
Right.
So, I mean, it's really 2.5 of his signing bonus would be left over.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that's where it is right now. I don't know. I think they would rather keep extra like they have a couple times in the past on the defensive line and trim elsewhere. And I think they can. I have Dunlap, Atkins, Billings, Johnson, Clark, Glasgow, Sims, Willis, Chris Smith. I have 9.
Okay.
I don't see why you can't keep 9. Looking at the whole totality of the team, and I have them keeping 6 linebackers and 9 DBs.
See, I've got 10 DBs.
And 9 DBs because I have the 26 offense.
Right.
And the 24 on defense.
Yeah. Yeah, I went – we agree on linebacker, and we can kind of circle back there because I think that's pretty clear cut. I go with 10 DBs, Paul. And for folks here, Adam Jones counts. We're not adding the extra, like the 54th guy that I get to keep for the first week of the season here.
Yeah, which maybe we should have that discussion.
Yeah, I do think, for me, all of the centers around Jeff Driskel and Kavari Russell, where this team kept two guys that they knew nothing about other than a draft grade and maybe some preseason film on their 53 last year when they had no idea who they were. And I think Driskel and Russell have proven enough, again, at the recordings of these BBPs to validate and show that there's potential, there's some rawness there that they'll keep them. So Kavari Russell is the 10th DB to me, just like Jeff Driskel's at third quarterback. So for me, it's just those 8 D linemen, 6 linebackers, 10 defensive backs with Russell being that 10th guy.
Who's your 9th guy?
So I've got I'm gonna roll through the starter. So it's Trey Kirkpatrick, Adam Jones, Josh Shaw, William Jackson III, Darquez Dennard, Kavari Russell. There's your 6 corners, if you will.
Okay.
On the depth
chart. I see what you're saying.
Sean Williams, George Iloka.
Sean Williams. I have Sean Williams to IR, but we don't know what's gonna happen with
Sean
Williams.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. So I haven't this is my sort of 53.
This is your with Sean Williams on
the with
okay,
Sean,
that makes sense.
Yeah. Deron Smith, Clayton Fedulum. I mean, they list Josh Shaw as a corner, so I'll just play that game.
Yeah.
So, yes, this is me not putting, C.J. Uzomah on IR to begin with and not putting Sean Williams on IR or counting Adam Jones as a suspended player.
Gotcha.
All
All right, now is the time I have to remind. We got to remind everybody.
Yeah.
In case they forgot. And I hope you didn't forget at this point. But September 23rd at 50 West Brewery is 50 Fest. Local beer, local food. They got three stages with local music. 80 different brews on tap from different local breweries. Food trucks. Petting zoos. All the stuff. So September 23rd, I want to remind all you guys, that's just an awesome event out there at 50 West. So make sure mark your calendars down for that. September 23rd, 50 Fest. Go to 50westbrew.com. FIFTYWESTBREW.com. So make sure you go there, check it out, and head on out and have some beer, listen to some music, good food, all that stuff.
Yeah. Maybe the goats at the petting zoo did not faint from the eclipse.
We don't know.
We'll be woken up by the time the petting zoo at 50 West begins. Maybe.
We hope
in a month.
We're really unsure.
If we're still past it, maybe it wasn't an eclipse faint.
They might just be dead. So we're worried about dead goats at that point. But anyway, just want to make sure everybody remembers 50 Fest, September 23rd. Make sure you check it out. So Sean Williams goes down with a really ugly looking injury, elbow. It kind of reminded of Eifert from a couple of years ago, where you see bones sticking in and you think the worst. As of right now, what we know is 4 to 6 weeks is the minimum on this. Yeah. As far as recovery, it could be out for the year.
Right.
It could be. But as of right now, we know 4 to 6 weeks. So that puts you early in mid-September, mid to late September, early October time frame. So we'll see. So the team will have to make a call on that, on whether they're going to put him on IR at final cuts, because if they do, then that means not until week 9, game 8, will he be able to return as the designated player to return.
Right.
So they could put him on there, save the roster spot, but they'd have to wait till week 9. But there's potential you could get and then him never come. He just ends up staying on IR all the time. You're allowed to bring two guys back this year off of the IR as designated to return. So that gives a little more flexibility than there was last year with just one.
Right.
That will be worth watching on cutdown day, how they handle Sean Williams.
Yeah, and more so than I mentioned Uzama briefly. I mean, CJ has now moved off of the little wheelie one-legged cart thing to crutches. We off air we talked about, like, what does this team do? Can you really stash a Sean Williams and CJ Uzama on your seven inactives? Like, two of your seven are hurt to start the year. That's a great question.
Yeah.
You know, Williams, if it's truly front end of this where they think he could come back in October or maybe end of September, I can see them doing that.
Yeah. With Sean, I would say no with CJ. Sean is far more valuable for a few games. Not that CJ doesn't have value, but he doesn't have Sean Williams value.
Right.
And CJ could be inactive anyway.
Right. And he was last year as a
healthy
player.
So, I mean, you're talking about a guy who might just be inactive as a guy.
Right.
So I'd be much more willing to put him on IR and use the roster spot on somebody else than Sean Williams, where if you're going to tell me that it's going to be the difference between 8 games of Sean Williams and 12 games of Sean Williams or something like that, or 10, that's worth stashing him as an injured guy early on.
The interesting thing, Paul, and you wrote about this early in the week for Cincinnati.com, is the safety. You know, look, De'Ron Smith, Clayton Fedulum. Look, Clayton was a seventh-round pick a year ago and kind of made his name late in the year. De'Ron has been interesting. He's a guy who, in his limited snaps and preseasons the last few years, is ball hawkish. But he's also been dinged up. He's a little undersized. He doesn't fit that old school like Bengal safety Zim model. You know, he's a little dude. And Josh Shaw is interesting because he struggled this camp in that sort of nickel role. I mean, maybe he's sort of, you know, he truly is that sort of like guy, like that, you know, help you out on the back end, help you out in a pinch and nickel, but you can't, if you're starting him, So it's interesting if Iloka, I mean, Saturday will be, or Sunday in Washington will be interesting if your two starters aren't out there.
No, yeah.
To see how those guys roll.
Absolutely. Josh Shaw, I mean, he's going to be moved into safety spot now. I mean,
yeah.
That's going to be a bigger part. And he, you know, during the offseason, during camp, we saw a lot of that. But in the game, he hasn't played a ton of safety.
Right.
They've actually had Marquise Flowers back there playing safety.
Yeah.
But in the last couple games. So, anyway, one thing I want to do, I want to bring in Paul Gunther. We had a conversation with him a little bit about a number of these topics that we just touched on here. So I want to bring in defensive coordinator, sort of talking on where they're at with a lot of this stuff that we just got done talking about. So here's defensive coordinator Paul Gunther.
How much do you differentiate in what they can do between Fedge and even Josh and Duran? I mean, do they do different things that maybe would fit Sean's spot better? Is there?
No, I mean, I think, you know, you can manage it by personnels and those type of things. So it might not just be one guy. It might be a couple here and there. And like I said, that's what these games are for, is getting a feel for who can do what. It's, you got four games for research and development of guys who, you know, hey, is this guy going to make it? Is this guy going to make it? And you got to get those guys in the game against good players so that you can see how they work it out.
The fact that George has already been out, is that giving you a head start on it?
Yeah, I mean, those guys have been getting a lot more snaps. You know, Josh is getting some snaps at safeties. Duran's getting a lot more. Obviously, I think he played, I don't know, 40 snaps the other night. So it's good for those guys. And, you know, 37's been in there a lot playing. So, you know, it's good. The more guys you can get experience now, the better off you are down the road.
Would you rep Josh there more than you have?
Yeah, he'd make. I mean, he's been playing a lot in the spring and then in the training camp. But it's you know, now with Sean going down, he'll get a little bit more exposure there. Now,
how do you think Chris Smith played the other night? It seemed like he was able to get to the quarterback a lot.
He did good. Like I said, I mean, we got a lot of the young guys in there early. Chris and Glasgow, Tupo went in there early. Fedgelum, you know, a lot of guys. The two young corners getting in there. All, you know. It's good to do, and like I said, I told him after last week, I'm going to put him in there with the big boys and see how he does, and I thought he did a good job.
So is he going to maybe see some time with the Chargers next week?
It'll be the same thing next week. I'm going to, you know, to me, you know, you don't want to win or lose the preseason games, and you want to say all that, but the games, to me, in my mind, is all for September 10th to make sure I have the right 53, and I think more so than this year than any other year, there's a lot of battles that obviously, you know, that guys have maybe been around here or never take the stuff for granted. So I need to get the young guys in there, especially with the front, getting those guys in there against good players, you know. So I talked to Jay this morning about that. You know, he and I are close. So I'm going to get some young guys in there, see if they can play. And against, they got a good line, Washington. So, you know, continue to get Kevin Minner experience in there as Mike linebacker. He's a new guy. Nick's a first-time starter. You know, getting those guys exposure with the guys up front.
With Chris, I mean, he's proven he can destroy tackles in the second half. I mean, does he get credit for that, or do you kind of more just judge him on how he does then against starters? Because you're trying to judge
the protection. Yeah, I mean, he was in there against Fisher.
Yeah.
You know, Fisher was, what, the first pick in the draft, second pick? I don't know what he was, but he was in there against him rushing, and I thought he did a good job. You know. So that's the kind of – that's the downside to not practicing against it. The fine line is, do you put all 11 guys that you think are going to be the stars, and they build the chemistry through the game? Or do you put the guys in there and say, hey, this guy's a bubble guy, and put him in there against their starters, and it may be a bit and piece kind of a defense. The downside of not practicing against a team, like a lot of teams are doing now, is that you can put him in there and you're not worried about getting him hurt and build the chemistry and not practice and then put the guys out there in the game. So to me, as a coach, to me, I'm always thinking about, hey, do I want to get this unit, have two good series, get them off the field, or do I want to evaluate guys? And right now I'm leaning towards evaluating guys because that's the most important thing.
You've got a lot of pass rush potential, guys.
Yeah.
As far as what you got in base at the other end spot, I mean, are you still searching there?
It's funny because we were just the opposite a year ago. It seemed like we had more base ends and not enough speed rushers. So right now, you know, obviously with Smith and Jordan Willis and Carl when he's in there, you know, Carlos and all, you know, that we've had that, you know. So I keep telling them inside tackles, hey, we got to keep the pass rush lanes in there because those dudes are going to come squirting out of there. So that's, again, it's something we got to figure out, the combination of guys there. That's one of the big points.
You really had no nose tackle step up for Pecco, right? I mean, guys are not really nobody's really seemed to step up there.
You know, like I said, Billings is basically a rookie. Glasgow's doing a good job in there. He's basically a rookie. And, you know, Pat's been around. So it's, you know, we know we have in Pat. We pretty much know what we have in Gino and Carlos and Michael. And those guys, it's the other guys, the other wave of guys that have two more games to say, hey, I deserve to stay here on the active roster.
You are putting Billings in that group.
I am. He's a rookie, basically.
Right. Yeah, right.
For all intents and purposes, he's a rookie.
With the edge rush that you're getting, it does seem like, you know, if you get the push that Gino gives you, I mean, it's the inside guys could eat pretty well with the edge speed,
sure.
Edge rush you guys.
Yeah,
than Gino, has anybody shown you inside pass rush that?
You know, it's been hot and cold. I would say hot and cold. So someone's going to step up. We may have, four edge rushers in there. We may have Gino and Carl and 94 and 96 in there.
NASCAR.
Yeah. So I mean, that's maybe something we would roll out this week and see if Chris can rush inside or
Right.
Carl, or we walk those guys around. So the four best pass rushers are in the game. So that's the that's the beauty of preseason football.
What's your take on the line? We kind of skipped over linebackers a little bit.
Yeah, I think because it's
I mean, I think we're in agreement that it feels pretty set.
Yeah.
With Vontaze Burfict, Kevin Minter, Nick Vigil, Vinny Ray, Jordan Evans, Carl Lawson being amongst the six linebackers. Everybody that outside of that, it's a tough get. Now that leaves Marquise Flowers, who's been around. And then a collection of undrafted guys.
PJ Dawson.
And PJ Dawson. Who was cut last year, so it's no secret, and hasn't played.
Yeah,
it's over.
Yeah. Look, the team, you know, defensively, I think in their perfect world would like to have seven linebackers just because those are like kind of core special teamers. It's a position. I mean, Vontaze Burfict's been hurt in recent history. Carl Lawson's already hurt after just one game of NFL football. But let's expect health and assume health. And that's, I think, to me, Paul, why they go eight on the D-line is because they see Carl Lawson sort of being the 8.5 D lineman for nickel rush situations. He will play the edge, and hopefully they don't run a draw at him.
Yep.
You know, they go get the quarterback because that's kind of where he's at as a rookie, and he has struggled in coverage. So Carl Lawson would be that sort of specialist guy, at least here at the outset. So, yeah, six, Vinny Ray, kind of super sub. You know,
which he's been for a long time.
So I think their hope and health, and then Jordan Evans, his flash, I think, really fast.
Yeah, he is fast.
Really big dude. I don't know. I like him as a prospect. We'll have to see if he can put sort of the rest of it together. Should he play? But his role will be special team. So yeah, I think the six. That's your six.
Yeah,
provided there are no other sort of injuries or whatever else.
Yeah, we talk about the extra spot that they'll get for one game with Adam Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, potentially that could go to Marquise Flowers.
Yeah.
Or that could go to an extra DB if they're trying to cover their bases there.
Right.
If you're talking
about Sean Williams is, you know, not IR'd, but they need to stash him, so
maybe finding another safety or DB. I don't.
Yeah,
we'll see that for a one game, but you know that can end up being a long stay because if someone gets hurt and then goes out for the season in game one,
exactly,
that guy sticks around. So we'll see how they end up using that one extra spot for 1 week. You know, maybe that's a place where Flowers could stick.
Yeah, and I think because Marquise knows. You know, on special teams, he made a few tackles at the end of last year and knows his role kind of there. I mean, I think Hardy Nickerson and Brandon Bell are sort of tailor-made for practice squad guys.
Yep.
You know, Bryson Albright and again, P.J. Dawson, I just don't think, you know.
That's it.
Yeah.
So maybe for a couple of those guys, this will be interesting for them. Are you hiring? Because, you know, you need to know where to post your job to find the best candidates. You can do it with ZipRecruiter. So post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. And they got powerful technology, matches the right people to the right job better than anybody else. It's good for them. It's good.
Yeah, that's why they're different. ZipRecruiter is different because unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the candidates finding you. It finds them, 80% of jobs post on ZipRecruiter gets a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. That's only one day, Paul.
Yeah.
And no, you know, juggling the emails or calls to your office. It's just screen, rate, and manage the candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard.
Yep, that's it. So find out today why ZipRecruiter's been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified candidates with immediate results. Right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. We like free.
Yeah.
Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/beat, BEATs. It's ZipRecruiter.com/beat. One more time. Try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/BEAT.
Yeah.
All right. So that's that. There could be a couple of Bengals that will be posting their resumes at ZipRecruiter coming up. Well, 1,000-ish NFL players could be posting
all
their resumes.
One shot.
It's crazy. I mean, it's going to be a pretty wild final cut with everything going down from 90. So all the way down to 53 at once. Although I expect the Bengals to make another round of cuts after the Redskins game because Marvin Lewis said so, basically. I don't want to keep guys around just because, you know.
Right.
And that could be the middle of the road guys.
Yeah.
That we're talking about. So where he would keep the very back end of the roster guys to go play, but maybe your bubbles might come out after the Washington.
Yeah, I think we'll see a lot of the UDFA guys still on this roster for the most part because, look, you're going to have 25, I can tell you right now, who aren't playing.
Yeah.
And you need to dress 46. So, yeah, there'll be you're right about that, Paul.
All right, so we've run through it pretty good here. Well, of course, though, it's time to take our question from Optimistic Bobby. So we got to see what he's got for us this week. So here's our question of the week from 50 West owner Bobby Slattery.
All right, it is that time of week. Highly anticipated every week now on the BBPA because you're a regular now. It's 50 West owner Bobby Slattery. Bobby, welcome back.
I love it. I'm happy to be back and just sitting here eclipsing right now.
you're just staring away.
I'm just staring away at the eclipse. Just, you know, it's not in my unusual optimism. I'm a little bit off here with this eclipse. It's not really doing it for me today, but that's okay. There's plenty of reasons to be happy out there.
All right. I like everything you're saying right now. So it makes me feel like, yet again, you're going to live up to your name. You have some sort of very optimistic question.
Absolutely. When it comes to the Bengals, I'm always optimistic.
All right.
I mean, like I said, until we get to 9 losses, there's no reason to panic.
No.
Everything's good.
No. Are people at 50 West out there panicking?
No, absolutely not. Are you kidding me? We're a brewery. Every day you work at a brewery is a good day, right?
That's true. That's true.
We're surrounded by beer, you know, biking, canoeing, kayaking, volleyball. Life's good out here at 50 West.
I got you.
Are you ready for my optimistic question this week?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
No one's, you know, Jim has not taken my kneecaps out yet as he threatened to do at the last podcast. So, you know, I guess that's a good thing that I have right now. So, all right, here's my question. And I'm going to make it relevant to this eclipse that's happening right now. Do you know when the last solar eclipse hit in the United States?
I know you're giving me trivia here. I didn't know I had to be prepared for trivia. How long ago?
I'll clue you in here. It was July of 1991. Do you know what happened shortly after July of 1991?
I'm going to guess that what happened. Go ahead. I'm just going to – I will just say
– Mike Brown took over the Bengals.
Correct. Okay.
So Mike took over in July of 1991. Fast forward to August of 2017, and Mike is still here. Obviously, me being the optimist – he's a sign here. Maybe this is Mike's this is the year we go to the Super Bowl. You know, he started there, back to the eclipse. I'm not going to ask you that question, are we going to go to the Super Bowl? I guess the question I want answered is everybody spends a lot of time dogging Mike, and you know that it is what it is, but I'm sure in his tenure there's a lot of good things that guy has done. So from your guys' perspective, what's the best thing that Mike Brown has done for the Bengals between now since 1991?
Since the last eclipse.
Since the last eclipse.
best thing that he's done? All right, I like that. That's a good question. Very relevant to the news of the day. I appreciate it. That's perfect. All right, we will hang up and listen, Bobby. We'll take this one on, and I look forward to talking to you next week.
Hoo day.
All right, Eclipse themed.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to appreciate that.
I do.
You got to appreciate that Eclipse theme. So, you know, a lot of fans don't like Mike Brown.
No.
We know that. A lot of people don't. It's fine. I have no problem with people who have issue with what's happened. I wrote plenty about it. You can read to your heart's content about the story about the Brown family that I wrote earlier in the year. Where they have, there's plenty of things in their history. There's reason not to agree with. But as far as the best things, where would you start with the best things?
Well, to me, I mean, I'm going to go painfully obvious, and that's hiring Marvin Lewis in 2003.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't when you talk about best things. Since in recent history, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's to me the one. I don't know. I mean, we can go all the way further back, but I that's the one I got to go with. I mean, yeah. I understand how frustrating it could be. I also could say like keeping the team in Cincinnati, but I don't really want to bring out the pitchforks.
No, let's building a stadium. Let's just see how much we control people. Getting people to give a half-cent sales tax.
Right.
Yeah. Possible hologram replay videos. I think that's the best. No, I personally, I think the best thing that he's done is be willing to relinquish control over to Duke Tobin, to Katie and Troy and everybody else in the family, and to Marvin Lewis, and to back away from being such a integral, understanding that it's time to push the day-to-day operations on and that's best for everybody. That very much coincides with this recent run of Bengals football where until last year they had a streak of playoff runs, five in a row. So, there's a lot. He still makes a lot of decisions, but he openly admits he's just – that's being involved like that as far as every single decision is not as much his calling. He does far more believing in whatever his coaches tell him to believe in. And that's a change, and that was a big change, a huge change. And you can see the difference in how the team has performed because of it. And I think it partially coincides with building enough trust in Marvin Lewis in that hire. Yeah. You know, that had to prove itself out. So that's my opinion on it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of great things that Mike has done in the community that no one will ever know about because he doesn't want anybody to know about. And a lot of money that he's given. But, I'm not trying to turn him into some sort of saint. But that's the other element that people don't know about. And if he has his way, never will.
Yeah.
All right. So that is our Optimist Bobby question of the week. Thanks to Bobby from 50 West for staying so optimistic.
Yeah.
So now we got to find out on the opposite end of that why you're mad about stuff. Why are you mad?
I developing a theme here.
Yeah.
Well, they all have a theme, right? okay, so remember how the car spiders are making me mad?
Of course. How could I forget?
And it really wasn't that they existed. It was like because they were getting in my vision, in my space. I had to mush them, and like then there were like webs and stuff. And maybe now, like, I have a greater appreciation for the car spider because I was like, they're eating something. There's a reason they're living there, right?
Right. It's not good.
So what's making me even madder than seeing a car spider in my peripheral is the existence of the car wasp.
Ooh.
Yeah, you don't want the car wasp.
No, you don't.
And like, why would the car wasp think, hey, let's start building wasp homes, condos, in like the cracks and crevices of... like rearview mirrors, what? Not like the outside mirror, not like the one behind it, because that'd be really gross and creepy. But like your side views, because they flip in and out.
Yeah.
So you don't even get hit by other cars. Like, why are they living in there?
Wasp condos.
Whatever.
Townhomes.
Send the spiders in there, man. You know what? I flip. Car spiders making me happy.
This is
kill the car wasp.
The food chain, man. You need this is why you can't be cursing off anything. It's all part of nature. It's all working together. It's part of nature.
I still don't want to see the car spider on my window.
No.
When I'm driving, because I will kill it, and that will make me mad.
All right.
But I'm cool with it living like elsewhere now.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear.
Invade the car wasp condo. I don't want that stuff in my car.
Breaking it. All right. Why I am happy. You know why I'm happy? I got a new couch with lower lumbar support. It's very exciting.
It's important.
It's very important. It's very important. I don't like to talk too much about what I had to spend to get this nice new couch, but there's nothing quite like the feeling that a man gets when he knows he's getting a nice new leather couch that you're going to spend the next 10 to 15 years of your life in. Yeah. I'm going to grow old on this thing. I'm going to grow old and probably fatter.
Yeah.
In this,
but the lumbar will be protected and supported.
It's got a lower lumbar, like extra little pillow action down there, which I need with my back stuff.
Yeah.
It's huge.
That is huge. That's big news.
It is big news. You know, our couch was the worst couch. Things that I've hated for like the last 5 years has been this couch. I can't tell you how many times I've complained about it. And now finally, the couch is gone. The old couch is gone. The new couch is here. Lower lumbar's taken care of. Everything's going good. Very exciting. All right. Well, we got to go. So the BBP has been brought to you by 50 West. Great to have you here. We'll be back next week predicting the 53-man roster. So look forward to that. And we're out of here. Let's just make it quick like that.
Yep.
We're gone. Bye.